Please stand by. We're about to begin. Good day, everyone, and welcome to today's RHC Technical Assistance conference call. Today's call is being recorded. At this time, I'd like to turn the conference over to Mr. Bill Finnefrock. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, operator, and I want to welcome all of our callers to today's Rural Health Clinic Technical Assistance call on Rural Health Clinic billing. Our speaker today is Charles James, who is President and CEO of North American Healthcare Management Services. They do a fair amount of Rural Health Clinic consulting, and we're pleased to have Charles with us today. I am the Executive Director of the National Association of Rural Health Clinics, and I'll be the moderator for today's call. Charles is from St. Louis, Missouri, which is where his company is based. He has a considerable amount of expertise in the area of claims reimbursement, office management, and information systems. Today's program is scheduled for 1 hour. The first 45 minutes will be devoted to our speaker's presentation, and the final 15 minutes will be reserved for questions and answers from you. This call series is sponsored by the Health Resources and Services Administration, Federal Office of Rural Health Policy, in conjunction with the National Association of Rural Health Clinics. The purpose of the series is to provide RHC staff with valuable technical assistance and RHC-specific information. Today's call is the 28th in the series, and it began in late 2004. As you all know, there is no charge to participate in the series. We encourage you to refer others who might benefit from the series to sign up to receive announcements regarding the call dates, topics, and speaker presentations. And you can get that information off of the Internet at www.ruralhealth.hrsa.gov/RHC. During the Q&A period of today's call, we ask that you identify yourself by name and location, what state you're calling from, before asking your question. And in the future, if you have questions that you'd like to ask or topics that you'd like to suggest, you can feel free to contact us at info, that's I-N-F-O, at narhc.org and put RHC teleconference question or topic in the subject line. I also want to remind you that you should have received slides for today's call, which were sent out by email prior to today. I want to thank you all for being with us, and I will turn control of the meeting over to our speaker, Charles James. Charles, it's all yours.
Great. Hello. Great. Thanks a lot, Bill. I appreciate the introduction. My name is Charles James. Bill covered all the bases in the in his introduction of me. We're North American Healthcare Management Services in St. Louis. We've been in business since 1992 and done a significant amount of rural health clinic billing, cost reporting, and consulting. Bill gave me a call a few weeks ago, and after a flurry of things out on the listserv, said, you know, maybe we should revisit some rural health clinic billing, basic components, and revisit some of the subjects that recur on the listserv. So that's why we're here today. So first, or secondly at this point, Bill, thank you very much for having me. Appreciate the National Association inviting me to do this. And for all of you, I know travel is a burden, but the National Association of Rural Health Clinics, narhc.org, obviously you're on the listserv if you are attending the call. It's an excellent resource for everything rural health. Get to their spring conference in San Antonio. There'll be this and much more information, and those are excellent networking opportunities, so you can get a chance to speak to people from your state. And so I highly encourage everyone to get to those conferences if they can, because they're definitely worth the travel. So you should have a PDF with the slides, and if you go on, the first slide obviously has the title. If you would go to slide 2, just a brief overview of some of the areas that we're going to cover today. Again, we're going to talk about the basic components of rural health clinic billing, and I want to talk and define the rural health clinic encounter and medical necessity. I'd like to talk about rural health services versus non-rural health clinic services. Brief note on preventive services, some basic claim submission requirements, and then some resources to, if you need to dig more deeply. So on the next slide, slide 3, first, I would like to start with defining some basic terms that we're going to talk about. In rural health clinic speak, anyway, the FI or fiscal intermediary is a term you'll frequently hear. This is your rural health clinic administrator or payer, and your FI is going to be all things rural health to you. They administer the program for rural health clinics. They process and settle cost reports. They set the encounter rate. They pay or deny or otherwise adjudicate rural health clinic claims, and they will determine rural health clinic billing and coverage issues. So we will talk about independent versus provider-based. So for provider-based rural health clinics, the FI has the same purpose, except that it's your parent entity's fiscal intermediary as well. So if you're a provider-based clinic, your parent entity, normally a hospital, their payer will be your rural health clinic payer. So when we talk about fiscal intermediary, we're generally talking about rural health clinic claims. On the next slide, Medicare Part B, FFS, or fee-for-service. When we use that term, Medicare fee-for-service carrier, any of those terms, we're generally talking about fee-for-service claims for non-rural health services. And, of course, we're going to define those shortly, but the term Medicare Part B, carrier, fee-for-service, we're generally talking about non-rural health services. Now, as many of us know and love, many of our carriers, our FIs as well, and many provider-based cases are consolidating to the MACs, or Medicare Administrative Contractors. So if we go to the next slide, the MAC transition, as just stated, we know many of those are changing. There's some uncertainty about when we independent rural health clinics will transition, particularly those of us with Riverbend should be the last to transition. I think there's some activity going on out there, and, of course, with new CMS leadership, that could change. But right now, independent rural health clinic will be the last to transition, though new rural health clinics may be assigned to the new MACs. But that transition is in full swing. So, next slide, never assume. And that's a serious rule of thumb for us in life as well as in rural health clinic billing, that we should never assume. You know, rural health clinic billing rules are similar across payers. It goes by Medicare law in general, but for those of us with different FIs, different MACs, they can have different interpretations of the same rules. So they may implement the program a little differently. So particularly when you're on the listserv or when you're speaking with people, always make sure that what you're hearing is relevant to your own FI, because it can be different from FI to FI. The next slide, same with state law and Medicaid. Again, on the listserv, I see a lot of questions about what particular providers can do and what kind of collaboration there has to be, what various Medicaid requirements there are, and there are 50 different ways to do it, and probably more than that. So medical practice laws, collaborative requirements, different state Medicaid programs, they vary widely. So always check with state agencies, Medicaid offices, before you make any assumptions, particularly on collaboration and medical practice. I see a lot of questions on the listserv about that. So if we go to the next slide, again, provider-based versus independent. Independent rural health clinics basically are those that don't qualify for provider-based status. These claims are going to be billed to a regional FI or MAC. A lot of us have Riverbend, maybe Trailblazers. There are certainly some others out there. But independent rural health clinics are those of us that aren't provider-based. Also, and generally say they're physician-owned, independent organizations, but, of course, they can be owned by other entities as well. Provider-based rural health clinics are outpatient departments of a parent entity. normally this parent entity is a hospital. And so the claims are going for that provider-based rural health clinic are going to be billed to the parent entity's fiscal intermediary. So that's the big distinction. It's for technical considerations, it's a outpatient department of that entity. It sometimes may not feel like it, but indeed that's how it's classified. And then the cost report for that clinic is integrated with that parent entity's cost report as just another department. So that is the distinction between the two, and there are some nuances between the billing, and we'll get into those shortly. So if we could go to the next slide, Rural Health Clinic Billing 101. It is all about the encounter. Rural Health Clinic Billing starts, the thing to always consider is whether or not an encounter occurred. And I reference two excellent resources for a definition of an encounter. And again, these are particular intermediaries, so some of your FIs may be different than this, but these will give a great guide. On the next slide, the Rural Health Clinic Encounter I define, and this comes directly from Riverbend's LCD, but translates to all, is that it's the provision of evaluation management services, the skill level that requires the assessment, clinical reasoning, et cetera, of a qualified RHC provider. So the metaphorical laying on of hands, I always say hands or eyes on the patient by a physician, nurse practitioner, PA, certified nurse midwife, clinical psychologist or social worker. We'll get into the providers briefly, but basically hands or eyes by a qualified provider on the patient. So medical necessity is required, so it has to be a medically necessary visit by one of the qualified providers to constitute an encounter. If there is no encounter, then there is nothing to bill to a rural health clinic payer. So we'll talk about how to handle some of these different situations, but that is the definition of an encounter. So I always get a lot of telephone calls, or I see discussion on the listserv, but mostly somebody calls me up and they say, hey, I've got this situation and X, Y, or Z, and it always starts with whether or not a physician or nurse practitioner, PA, saw that patient. So, for example, counseling with a family member when the patient is not there, that is not an encounter. The patient has to be present, and there has to be medical necessity. So on the next slide, I give some examples of what is not medically necessary and would not constitute an encounter. We'll talk about how to handle some of these, but for example, a patient comes in solely for administration of an injection, that is not an encounter. Patient comes in for dressing changes, not an encounter. Lab results, refilling prescriptions, none of those are encounters. That may be stating the obvious, but it's also explicit that those are not medically necessary. So the next slide, qualified RHC providers are...
Charles?
Yes.
Stop a second, because I think this is an important point. I often get folks who will say, well, those are necessary services, and the physician or the PA or the nurse practitioner ordered those services, and doesn't that therefore mean that they're medically necessary? Could you go into that just a little bit more, how that is not therefore considered a medically necessary service, even though the physician ordered that, or is that part of the care being provided to the patient?
Bill, I'm sorry, you're breaking up very badly.
We're using a different phone here, so I don't know if this is any better. But could you just go into a little bit more why certain services, when they are provided by the office, even though the physician has said that this is something that we want to do, is not being medically necessary?
Right. And what I understand the question is, and you're, like I said, you're cutting in and out there, but even the question arises to Bill frequently, if a physician orders the service, why is it not medically necessary? Did I recap that correctly? And the answer is basically, from my understanding, is that even if a physician orders it, it may be incident to, the physician services, A, but B, it may not necessarily require the skills of the physician or the mid-level, pardon me, the nurse practitioner or PA, so that those incident two services that the physician orders would be considered part of the encounter, but they're not necessarily an encounter in and of themselves. Does that get at what you were after, Bill? Okay. So, and I'm going to talk in more detail about some of these incident two services very shortly, the next couple of slides. But so first to establish that qualified providers are physicians, nurse practitioners, PAs, certified nurse midwives, clinical psychologists, and clinical social workers for mental health services. So those are qualified providers in an RHC setting. And the next slide shows rural health services. Now, when we're going through these rural health services, these are not necessarily encounters in and of themselves. So they're either an encounter or they are included in the encounter. So rural health services are the physician services, the services and supplies that are incident to the physician service, nurse practitioner, PA, certified nurse midwife services, and services and supplies incident to those same providers. On the next slide, rural health services continued, talks about visiting nurse services to the homebound. Now, that's specific to visiting nurse services if they're in a home health shortage area. And I think that's relatively rare, but it is in the benefit policy manual. Clinical psychologists, clinical social worker services. And the last two are very important. So services of registered dietitians and otherwise covered drugs that are furnished by. Now, those are prime examples. Those are incident to services. And I think that the reason they get defined, they're ordered by the physician, the physician considers them medically necessary, but they don't constitute separately payable services. So they're incident to, and they get bundled with the encounter. So they're part of the encounter, even if they may happen on a separate date. They're part of that rural health clinic encounter and considered to be all part of the same service. And again, I'm going to get into more detail about that. So on the next slide, we talk about the locations. So rural health clinic service locations, encounters can be rendered at the clinic or center, at a nursing home, SNF beds, Part A beds are included. So if rural health clinic providers go out to a nursing home and that nursing home is a Part A covered SNF, that's a rural health clinic encounter. If it's just a typical custodial care nursing facility, that's a rural health clinic encounter. If the provider goes to the patient's home or place of residence, that's a rural health clinic encounter. Now, that place of residence can be kind of a tricky one. Fairly, you know, obvious with the patient's home, but sometimes in juvenile facilities or detention centers, that's where the patient lives. Some of those can be questionable, but the patient's home, it's got to be a patient's place of residence. Patient's home is a rural health clinic visit, and the regulations also seriously say elsewhere, i.e., the scene of an accident. I've never seen a scene of an accident rural health clinic encounter, but it's in there. So typically, rural health clinic encounters and services incident to the rural health encounter are payable from the clinic, nursing home, or patient's home. That's what we're saying. So the next slide, the incident to services. So first we've talked about the encounter. We've talked about where they can be rendered. And now we're talking about what's included with those. So all those incident two services that I referenced earlier, when we do a lot of talking about bundling charges with rural health clinic encounters. And at first blush, for those of us that may be new to rural health clinics, and certainly when I first got into it, we talked about bundling encounters, and everybody got very uncomfortable because basically we're you know, charges are fluctuating for the same E&M codes, it seems. But what we're really talking about is billing incident two services with the encounter and bundling those together. I'm going to give an example on the next slide of how to do that. So any drugs that are administered, services and supplies, you know, dressings, and anything that's, again, incident two gets bundled with that. And they don't necessarily have to occur on the same date as the encounter, so they can be bundled together. And traditionally, a 30-day rule has been applied, so that an incident two service, 30 days before or after the encounter, you can bundle it together with that encounter. Oftentimes, people will say, well, those injections, I don't get paid for them, so why should I bill them? Well, Medicare wants the services rendered to be reported. Obviously, the services are going to be in the medical note, in the medical record. And those services that are incident two are considered covered. They just may not be separately payable. And we're going to report actual charges. So when we report the actual charges, there will be an effect on the coinsurance, and the coinsurance will fluctuate based on the fact that incident two services are included with the encounter. So when you hear somebody say the cost of services are included in the cost report, that's what we're talking about. These incident two services, by their nature, the expenses of those are included in the financial statement on the expense side, and they go on the cost report, but you may not have a separately payable claim. So if we go to the next slide, obviously, examples of incident two, we're talking about injections, dressing changes, prescription services, blood pressure monitoring. We could add to the list, but I think we all know the types of things that we're talking about. So if we go to the next slide and how to bundle those, and just a very basic example, patient comes in for an office visit, say it's a 99213 for $70, and there's also an injection for $20, and the service is provided, the office visit is by the physician, and maybe a nurse gives the injection, but we have a $90 total charges and an encounter that was provided by the physician NP, PA, or certified nurse midwife. What we're going to do is, on the UB04, we're going to talk about UB04 billing, there will be one line item that we will combine both of those services for a total charge of $90 that gets submitted to Medicare. So the patient is going to have an $18 copay, which is 20% of the charge amount. And all we're going to do is add those together, and the UB04 goes out with a $90 line item on it for one date. Now, how you handle that on your practice management system often becomes a different question. A lot of you may be using electronic medical records, and it could be a little tricky there. But on a practice management system, what we always advise folks to do is that you post, we used a 99213, and the typical charge is $70. So we post a 99213, override the $70 price to the sum of the services to $90, then post a zero charge, so that you on your practice management system have record of what actually occurred, and then the zero charge would obviously get suppressed, and then the practice management, when it produces the UB04, should produce one line with the appropriate charge. Now, none of what I just said about posting that is any kind of Medicare requirement. It's a suggestion on how to bundle services so that your claims are generated appropriately and the correct dollar amount goes out on the claim form. So let's go to the next slide. I'm sure we'll get some questions about bundling those charges, but we go to the next slide, influenza pneumococcal injections, these are the one instance where injections are paid. So these are covered Medicare services. We're not going to submit claims for flu and pneumococcal shots. We're actually going to generate a log. The log will be submitted with the cost report, and all of those claims will be paid with the annual cost report reconciliation. Pardon me. I said all those claims will be paid. All of those injections will be paid with the cost report reconciliation. So the cost report actually has a worksheet on it that has number of injections given, staff time per injection, cost for the medication, and then there's a calculation on what you'll get per injection. Now, the downside is that you don't get the money until your cost report reconciliation comes through, which most of us do flu shots in October and November, at least the majority of them, and you may not get your money till 2, 3, 4 months after your cost report is submitted, but those do get paid. Let's go to the next slide, non-rural health services. So we've talked about what's included in the encounter and what are rural health services and how to handle the incident two things that may not qualify alone as encounters. And now we want to talk about non-rural health services and things that are not going to be billed using rural health clinic procedures, using rural health clinic billing guidelines. So non-rural health services can be billed to your fee-for-service Medicare Part B carrier or to the hospital's FI. And these services include the technical components of diagnostic testing, X-ray, EKG, ultrasound, Holter monitors, etc., the technical components for those. It includes all laboratory services, and it includes the services rendered in the hospital by rural health clinic providers. So technical components, diagnostic tests, laboratory services, hospital professional services can all be billed fee-for-service. We go to the next slide. Under diagnostic testing and lab, this is where some of the difference between provider-based and independent can get a little tricky. So diagnostic testing for independent and lab for independent, the professional component of the X-ray or EKG is going to be bundled with the RHC encounter. So the visualization of a particular diagnostic test is part of the encounter. But the charge for actually taking the picture, the technical component of that, is going to be billed to Medicare Part B carrier using the fee-for-service provider number. This is independent. So let's talk about that again. Professional components for diagnostic tests bundled with the encounter. The technical components get billed fee-for-service, and all labs get billed fee-for-service to the Part B carrier. It's independent clinics. Let's go to the next slide and talk about provider-based. And I see recurring questions about this on the listserv where, one answer may come back for independent, and it can be very confusing. So for provider-based clinics, the professional component of the X-ray or EKG is handled the same way we just talked about. The professional component gets bundled with the RHC encounter. The difference for provider-based is that the technical components for X-rays, EKGs, ultrasounds, etc., are billed to the FI using the parent entity's provider number. That's the major difference. It gets billed under the parent entity's provider number. Now, this is for Medicare. The lab services get billed the same way. So the lab services, provider-based, get billed to the FI using the parent entity's provider number. So that is a major distinction between provider-based and independent. So if we go to the next slide, the next slide for lab services, provider-based, and there are a couple different ways to handle this. So the lab tests performed in the clinic, patients in the clinic, the draws taken in the clinic, the lab is processed using clinic equipment, a type of bill, 141, is submitted using the parent's provider number, parent entity's provider number. Example two is if the lab is drawn in the clinic, but then the sample or the specimen gets sent to the hospital for processing, you still have a type of bill 141. The type of bill 141s, I believe, are paid on a fee schedule. If the patient is seen in the clinic, but then they're sent to the parent hospital to have the lab specimen drawn as well as processed at the hospital, then a type of bill 851 is submitted using the parent's provider number. And the type of bill 851 is cost-based reimbursement to the hospital. I am no expert on hospital billing whatsoever. That's about as much as I know about it. But that's the different ways that the tests are handled for provider-based lab testing. I'm sure we'll have some questions about that. If we could go to the next slide, CMS not too long ago issued a quick reference guide for those various billing procedures for different provider-based independent rural health clinics. If you just cut and paste that link into your web browser, it should get you there. I'm going to post this on my website as well. But there are all types of entities in there, not just RHCs, but there's an RHC page that gives a real nice quick and dirty reference for all the different diagnostic testing billing, lab billing, et cetera. And they just released that, I think, in December or maybe November. But it lays it out pretty clearly there. If we go to the next slide, I'm going to jump to 99211 office visits. This is another question that routinely comes up. As we all know, and I certainly don't want to get into an evaluation and management coding session here, but 99211s, I believe, in the CPT book are referenced as nursing visits. Administration of an injection, blood pressure check, it's a nursing visit. Frequently, physicians may bill a 99211. But regardless, for RHC purposes, these are not RHC encounters. So if we go to the next slide, first, if a 99211 is performed by a nurse, it doesn't qualify as an encounter. That nursing service is incident two. So if that nurse gives an injection, it's going to be bundled with the office visit like we talked about. If a patient comes in and only the nurse sees them and they give an injection, there's nothing billable there. It's incident to something. It's incident to physician services. But in and of itself, there's nothing that you can bill for rural health right there. It does not qualify as an encounter. If a 99211 was performed by a physician, it's probably undercoded. Pardon me. If it's performed by a physician, nurse practitioner, PA, or other qualified provider, it's probably undercoded. And if they did do it, it does not require the expertise of a physician or nurse practitioner or mid-level. A medically necessary encounter has to require the skill level of that provider. So, for example, if somebody comes in and needs a suture removal and the physician does it, there should be a it should be documented in the patient's chart why the physician needed to do that particular removal. If there's a reason, my bet is that there's at least a 99212. So a lot of times if physicians are doing, so maybe it's a particularly complicated removal or there's an infection or something of that sort, and again, I'm not a coding expert, but Typically, that's going to be something that's undercoded if it's a 99211 performed. So that would be something to look at. But in general, 99211s are not real health encounters. Let's move on to the next slide, if we could. Hospital services. Hospital services, we saw back at the initial slide, hospital services are non-rural health services. They can be billed to the Medicare carrier for fee-for-service reimbursement. So inpatient or outpatient, it's a non-rural health service billed to fee-for-service, Part B. Of course, with all things rural health, there are always the exceptions. And the exception in this case is if the parent entity is a critical access hospital and have chosen option 2 billing, outpatient hospital services are, go to the parent FI using their provider number. But there, that's going to be fairly unique set of circumstances, but that's the only case where that's the situation. So hospital services, Medicare Part B. So we go on to the next slide, preventive services. Medicare preventive services are partially payable as encounters, and these are the preventive services that fall within the scope of Medicare-covered preventive Medicare-covered preventive services. And those are the welcome to Medicare physical, the screening PAP or pelvic exam, cardiovascular screening. Let's go to the next slide.
Charles, just we have about 5 minutes for
okay. Your
presentation.
Okay, great. Thank you. Professional component, I'll breeze through these. Professional component, let's just say for Medicare physical, professional component gets billed as an REC encounter. Diagnostic portion is going to go to Part B. The welcome to Medicare physical is once per lifetime and deductible coinsurance applied. The other preventive services on the next slide, professional component gets billed, again, same drill. Professional component, part of the REC encounter, the technical component, the diagnostic test, get billed to the carrier or FI. And the big thing with preventive services is that any encounters with routine diagnoses are typically going to be rejected. So if it's a preventive service that's outside of the scope of the covered Medicare schedule, it's going to get bounced. And that's where an ABN would apply and the patient would either pay for that or you submit a claim for a non-covered service. Let's go to the next slide, diabetic and nutrition counseling. These services, that is incident two, that is covered under the REC encounter. It's not separately billable, and you could not submit a Medicare Part B claim for that if it's rendered during rural health clinic hours. Those services are part of the cost report. So next slide, mental health services. Mental health services performed by a clinical psychologist or clinical social worker, billed using revenue code 900. The mental health service claims are rather tricky. The diagnostic services are paid 100% of the rate, but therapeutic services are subject to a 62.5% payment limitation, and the calculation on those gets a little hairy. But both types are payable, and actually a mental health service and a rural health clinic encounter are payable on the same day. We go to the next page, claim submission. The most we all know they go on a UB04. The most important thing here is that actual charges have to be submitted, not your encounter rate. So just like on the bundling example given, we want to submit an actual charge. The payment is going to come back based on the rural health clinic rate, and coinsurance deductible amounts are going to be applied based on the charge. A medically necessary diagnosis has got to be on a claim to get it paid. Only one encounter per day is billable. If we go to the next slide, visits with somebody comes in, sees the physician and the nurse practitioner, so they have more than one visit, same day, it's one encounter. Some payers, and this is where it's very important to check with your intermediary, for example, Riverbend, will allow an RHC encounter and a hospital admission on the same day. Others don't. I believe that Trailblazers does not. So some allow, some don't. Theoretically, two encounters on the same day for different diagnoses are payable. So somebody comes in the morning for hypertension, they break a finger in the afternoon and come back, they're theoretically payable. Of course, it will be tricky to get that paid. And again, rural health clinic encounter and mental health visit on the same day are payable. Next page, next slide, revenue codes. Let's list the revenue codes. The one I want to make the distinction of is the 524, which is a visit to a Part A bed, and the 525, which is a non-Part A visit. The 522 is a home visit, and 521 is what's going to be on most of your claims. On the UB04, typically you'll have the revenue code stated here, you'll have the date of service, and you'll have the charge amount. CPTs can be included, but they go through more rigorous edit testing. So you're not required to submit the actual CPT codes for independence anyway, and that facilitates the bundling as well. MSP questionnaire, next slide. I think one place where I see a lot of clinics that probably are not in compliance with Medicare is with MSP. And even RHCs, you must, and some of these interpretations vary per payer, but RHCs have to have a mechanism for documenting the long version of the MSP questionnaire at every visit. So, for example, if you have an MSP questionnaire on file per patient that you do at the beginning of the year, then follow-up visits for the rest of the year, you have to at least document that you've asked them the questions in that questionnaire. But something I think a lot of rural health clinics probably need to think about are whether or not they're in compliance with Medicare secondary payer. There's a link also on there to the whole MSP section. Finally, DDE, direct data entry. Next slide. DDE, Florida Shared, direct data entry, there are many names for it, is an excellent online tool. It's an old bulletin board system is what it is that gets you into Medicare's, into the Medicare system. And it's available to Part A providers for rural health clinics. That's what we are. And it's a great way to get in, do eligibility online, check patient eligibility. You can correct your 201 reports online, and it really becomes a critical claim management tool for rural health clinics, and especially those of us that may be new to it and maybe our system isn't all worked out and we're having a bunch of claim rejections. It's a great way to get on and correct the claim real time and get your claims adjudicated. There's a cost of it. I think it's typically $200 to get in, but it's well worth the money because it really is a great revenue cycle management tool. So next slide, to summarize what we just talked about DDE tools, you review claim status, correct claims online. If we go to the next few slides, there are some additional resources there. On the National Association listserv, just remember when you're posting comments out there, it's extremely public. It goes across the country. I know CMS and FIs monitor the listserv, and, of course, you can't discuss setting fees on it. So just remember, you know, it's a very public forum. Sometimes we don't feel that way behind our computers, but it goes out to everybody. If we go to the next, actually the resources continued, go to the next one, the CMS resources. Those are really important resources for being able to do your own research on these issues. Get out to the Medicare site, the CMSHHS.gov, and get to that rural center because it really is chock full of information that you'll find very useful. More CMS resources, get to the UB04 completion, the claims processing manual, and that gives you very specific field-by-field instructions for the UB04, and then the claims processing manual for RHC coverage issues. And don't forget about the MedLearn catalog. There is some very specific information for rural health clinics out there. So final part of that was kind of quick, but I think it's time to open it up for questions. So, Bill?
Operator, you want to give the instructions?
Thank you, sir. Today's question and answer session will be conducted electronically. If you'd like to signal to ask a question, please press star 1 on your touch-tone phone. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. A voice prompt will let you know when your line is open. We ask that you please state your name and location before posing your question. Once again, that's star 1 if you'd like to ask a question. And we'll go to our first.
Go ahead, caller.
Please go ahead. Your line is open. Please check your mute button. We're unable to hear you. Okay, hearing no response, we'll move on to our next question.
Go ahead, caller.
Mary Peterson, Mile Bluff Clinic, Mauston, Wisconsin.
Hello.
Bill, this regard to the question we called you about the other day, the IPPE exam or the Welcome to Medicare physical.
I figured I'd hear from you.
I'm just, you know, trying to put this out as a possible alert to other rural health clinics until we get some clarification that, you know, I'm wondering how Riverbend is going to be able to distinguish, or other rural health clinic contractors are going to be able to distinguish, that we are billing an IPE exam and it is not to be applied to the deductible. As in the past, last year, when there was only a six-month window, patients pretty much so had to meet their, were meeting their deductible with it. But now that there is no deductible requirement, as I understand it at least, that this covers all Medicare, including rural health, how will the contractors be able to recognize this? To me, they would have to key on the diagnosis code. But again, if we have a sick visit and an IPPE exam and it's commingled in a 521, multiple diagnosis codes on the UB04, how is this going to get accomplished?
And we're looking into that, and as soon as we get a clarification, we will post that up on the listserv.
Okay, and I, just so other clinics, you know, if you start to bill this, we haven't gone that route yet, but, you know, it could be a possible problem for our beneficiaries.
Yep. Thanks, Mary.
Yep.
And we'll take our next question.
Go ahead, caller.
This is Pioneer Memorial in South Dakota. Question on the MSP. Does it have to be completed by the Medicare patient that a physician goes to the nursing home or a home visit, or if it's just in the clinic proper?
I believe that it would have to be completed for any, and I guess in the nursing home, that their agent or the I think it's technically called their agent, would have to fill that out. We should probably get clarification of that from Riverbend or from the payer, but I believe it's for any Medicare beneficiary.
Thank you.
And we'll take our next question.
Go ahead, caller.
Tara Geiger, Sioux City, Iowa Mercy Medical Clinic. On that incident two services where we can bill and bundle within 30 days.
Right.
Like a patient came in with pneumonia, and then they have to come in the next few days and get Rocephin shots.
Right.
Are we supposed to be putting, like, a range of dates on that claim, or just the first date that the doctor saw them and bundled the fee?
You know, the I think the guidance by payers is going to vary a little bit, but the standard advice has been to give the encounter date for those.
Okay, thank you.
The original encounter date?
Correct. Or whatever date that they saw the provider.
And we'll take our next question. Please go ahead.
Go ahead, caller. Don't be shy.
Hi, this is Beth with Magnolia Regional Health Center.
Hello. Where is that, Beth?
Yes.
Where?
In Corinth, Mississippi.
Mississippi, great. Thank you.
Back to the I have a question on the preventive services. What exactly are you referring to as partially payable?
Well, just the fact that the professional component is billed as part of the encounter.
Okay.
Yeah, and then the technical components get billed to the carrier.
We were just unclear on what you were referring to as partially payable. Thank you very much.
Next caller?
Yes, we'll take our next question, sir.
Yes, this is Connie with the Hannibal Regional Hospital. And I have a question in regards to the flu shots. I am a hospital-owned provider, and we currently bill our flu shots as a bill type 131 under the hospital provider number, and you did not indicate that that could be done.
Okay, and you're correct. And for provider-based, some FIs want you to bill them directly to them. Others require the log with the hospital's cost report.
Okay. And I have one more question for you. Does the same date of service on a hospital-based clinic still apply, ruling still apply? In other words, if I have a hospital lab test for the same date that a patient had an encounter at the rural health clinic on some of the ancillary services, those have to be combined and billed.
Right, that's correct. And I believe for critical access, that you're talking about the 72-hour rule.
Well, it's not just the 72-hour rule. It's the same date of service rule,
right,
too.
Right.
Two separate rulings, basically.
Right. So, but I believe for critical access hospitals that is waived.
Okay. I'm not a critical access hospital.
So you would be subject to that.
Yeah, I am subject to that.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
And we'll take our next question.
Go ahead, caller.
This is Heather from North Coast Family Health Center in California. And my question is on psychiatrist services. Is a psychiatrist a qualified provider for the mental health visits?
Yes, because they're an MD.
Thank you.
And we'll take our next.
Go ahead, caller.
Hello, this is Diane from a provider-based clinic in Missouri, and I'm calling to verify the proper way to bill office procedures like a joint injection or a skin tag removal, particularly on the same day when a patient has an E&M code as
right.
well.
Right. Those are going to be incident to or part of one whole encounter.
Okay.
So if you have an E&M code and a surgical procedure, you're going to have one encounter.
Okay, and bundle the charges?
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
And we'll move to our next.
Go ahead. Go ahead, caller.
Hello, this is Roz Leon from Family Practice in Newport, Vermont. And my question was, we're a provider-based clinic. There are several of us that are under this one hospital. And we recently had like a group flu clinic that was open. How should those flu clinic services get billed? Can they still go on our individual cost reports?
They should, but who was all included in the group? Was it your group of clinics, or were there other?
It was open to the public, but we individually billed our own services.
How would you determine who was responsible for doing the billing for their own services?
Well, because the patients were registered as they came in, and we have an electronic.
So you were able to identify them as being linked to a specific RHC?
Correct.
Go ahead, Charles.
Yeah, then I would say that they get billed with that specific RHC's cost report.
Okay. Thank you.
And we'll take our next question.
Go ahead, caller. Are you on mute?
Can you hear me? It's Alice Rarig in Juneau, Alaska.
We can hear you from Juneau, Alaska.
Great. Thank you. I just wondered about telehealth encounters. It sounds as though they are not going to be billable at encounters.
No, they are. Telehealth is, and actually I did not put those in just because it was basic, but telehealth is, and there's an originating fee. If you will email me, I can email you some of the specifics on that.
Okay.
But telehealth is, and then the provider at the opposite end gets their little piece too.
RHC is a recognized telehealth site, and you get, as Charles said, the transmission fee, and the other provider on the other end of the connection bills for his or her services.
Yep.
Okay, thank you.
You would not get an RHC encounter rate for that, though. You're just getting the telehealth billable rate.
Right.
Okay?
Yes, we'll take our next caller.
Caller? Go ahead, caller.
Shirley Mingus, Copper Queen Hospital, Bixby, Arizona.
Arizona?
Yes.
Okay, great.
My question is on a critical access provider-based clinic. The visits to our swing bed patients, are those considered hospital services or clinic health, rural health services?
The provider services you can bill as an encounter.
It's a rural health clinic encounter.
Yeah. And then, of course, the critical access hospital would bill their Part A, you know, the Part A bed as well. But the provider visit to that Part A bed is a rural health clinic encounter.
Okay, thank you.
At the time that they went there, you said it was a swing bed?
Yes.
The patient was a SNF patient as opposed to an acute patient?
Correct.
Okay, yeah, then it's an RHC.
Okay.
I just want to make sure which way it was swinging.
And we'll take our next question.
Go ahead, caller.
Denise at St. Luke Hospital in Marion, Kansas. We have a question about commercial payers. Do the same rules apply to all commercial payers, or is it only just to Medicare and Medicaid?
To commercial payers, none of these rules apply. So this is just, this is really just for your Medicare patients. Medicaid, the same parameters generally apply, but every state's Medicaid is going to be a little different, so definitely check with them. But no, typically it does not affect commercial patients.
Well, all the injections and things, even though we're an RHC, we can still bill to commercial payers?
Correct.
Thank you.
And we'll take our next question.
Yes, our question has already been answered through the questions and answers that have been going on.
Perfect.
Thank you. And if you do find that your question has been answered, please press star 2. And we'll move to our next question.
Hi, this is Tammy Michula with Custer County Medical Center in West Cliff, Colorado. We are a freestanding rural health clinic. And you didn't touch anything as far as carve-outs for, like, Medicare B. Is that something that we discuss? Or?
You're right, and I specifically did not because those can get pretty touchy. But, yes, you can do carve-outs.
Okay.
And just for everyone listening, a carve-out is basically taking a portion of the rural health clinic and eliminating those costs from the cost report. But the caution is that, first of all, for carving out physician services is dramatically different than carving out other items. So, for example, lab services are automatically carved out and you can bill those. But if you're talking about carving out physician services, say, for example, you want to do minor surgical procedures. And you would have to set aside non-rural health clinic hours to carve out physician services. And during non-rural health clinic hours, everything you do is non-rural health clinic and has to be billed to Medicare Part B.
Now, does that have to be, like, scheduled separately?
Yes.
Like, if we have someone come in after hours, because we're pretty rural, we're 60 miles from nowhere,
mm-hmm.
and the provider does an EKG, basically everything that's done during that time is carved out.
That's correct.
And you did it during non-RHC hours. So, technically, to me, you're not even carving it out because
it's
during RHC time.
Right.
So anytime they come in for a physical and do an EKG, that can't be considered a non-RHC?
That is absolutely correct. So it would have to be during non-rural health clinic hours.
Okay.
And, yes.
Okay.
You're correct. So for example, what you can't do is have one corner of your building for non-rural health services and the rest of it for rural health and say, oh, well, here, you go over to the... Go over across the rural health clinic line, and we'll do that for you. You know, that's commingling, and that's where discussion of carve-outs can be very dangerous.
Okay, so it's not just a separation of time, the time carved out or anything like that. If a nurse does an X-ray, they are an X-ray tech with limited scope. If the nurse goes in off of an order from the doctor and goes and does that X-ray, that can be billed as a carve-out?
Correct. The technical components and lab services are really, they're really not carve-outs because they're non-rural health clinic services, and that's how you're billing them.
Okay.
So carve-out is really if you're trying to carve out physician services.
Does that mean it's me?
Hello?
Yes.
I didn't know how that worked, how we knew it was our turn. Oh, and by the way, you can't hear us in the background, can you?
Not till now.
Not till now. Okay. All right. We had...
Could you identify yourself, please?
I'm sorry. My name is Eva Sorensen.
Where are you from?
I'm calling from Eastern Oregon Medical Associates. We're an independent RHC
right.
in Baker, Oregon.
Great.
And somebody earlier mentioned something about the welcome to Medicare physical
mm-hmm.
not being subject to deductible. When did that change?
This is an issue that has just been brought to our attention recently. Mary Peterson, who was our initial questioner, shared with me some information yesterday that we're looking into, and we don't have any clear answer on that yet.
Okay. I hadn't heard anything about it.
We just heard about it yesterday, so
you're not alone.
You're only getting it 24 hours later than I did.
I see. Okay. All right. Okay, thank you. Now,
sure.
So do I just put you back on speaker now?
You do whatever you want to do. The operator will take care of disconnecting you from the voice part of this.
Oh, I see. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
And we'll take our next question.
Go ahead, caller.
Hello, this is Sharon from Mid-Columbia Medical Center in the Dalles, Oregon. I, too, have a question regarding the preventative services discussion. In there, it talks about welcome to Medicare physicals and screening pap and pelvic, but it does not refer to a man's physical. And we know that, you know, the digital rectal exam has its own code, but it does not refer to a V7 0.3, a routine medical exam.
Right, and I was just trying to keep it relatively simple
okay.
for this discussion. But
okay.
So those preventive services, if they're rendered according to Medicare's coverage schedule, the professional component will be part of the encounter,
mm-hmm.
and the technicals will be billable to Part B. So, no, I did not include every one in there that's billable.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure it was not excluded from.
No.
We're only going to have time for one more question here. We're already running up a little bit over, so this next question will have to be our last question.
Thank you, sir. And we will take our final question for the day.
Go ahead, caller. You get to close it out.
Please go ahead. Your line is open. Please check your mute button.
Hi, my name is Angie Leibel.
Where are you from, Angie?
I'm calling from Atkinson, Nebraska, Greater Sandhills Family Healthcare.
Great. Welcome. What's your question?
I got a question on the injections or the Incident 2 services given after an encounter.
Okay.
But say the encounter has already been billed out, how do you capture that those extra charges if you didn't know that patient was coming back in?
One way you could do that, in effect, your best option, you're gonna eat that.
Okay.
I mean, you could bill a corrected claim. So I don't have the type of bill. So you'd send in, I think it's 718, but don't quote me on that. So you'd send in a type of bill with a corrected claim to correct the amount of the charge.
Okay.
On there is the only way to do that. You know.
So basically, we really just need to have our physicians make sure and document if that patient is coming back in.
Right. It really becomes an internal control issue that you're able to track that. And that's why that incident two billing is kind of problematic, because some of the measurement of it is more expensive than what you're going to get back from it.
Okay. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Charles, and thank you to all of our questioners and participants. I'm sorry we weren't able to get to everybody's questions, but I want to thank everyone for participating, and I want to thank the Office of Rural Health Policy for sponsoring this series with the National Association of Rural Health Clinics. As was mentioned at the outset, we do make a recording of the call available. In addition, there will be a transcript available as well, and those are posted on the Office of Rural Health Policy website. I gave you that web address earlier, but let me give it to you once more. And if I can find it in my notes here, I will give it to you. It is www.ruralhealth, one word, ruralhealth.hrsa.gov/RHC. You also see transcripts of all of our previous calls, as well as the recordings that we've started to do this past year of our previous calls. That typically is available in about a week or so after the call. Our next Rural Health Clinic Technical Assistance call will be the second Tuesday in March at 2 o'clock Eastern. We have not identified the topic as yet, but we will get information on that, as well as the speaker and additional information when it is available. Again, I want to thank everyone for participating in today's call. And have a great day. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. And that does conclude today's conference call. Thank you for your participation. You may disconnect at this time.